Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this is going to be a fun one.
Hey, this is going to be a lot of fun, man. We have got a studio full this morning. First up on Atlanta Business Radio, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Vice President with FinSync, Mr. Eddie Davis. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Awesome to be here.
Well, before we get too far into things, Eddie, can you share a little bit about FinSync? How are you serving folks?
Absolutely. So FinSync is an advocate for small businesses. We're based here in Atlanta, and it's really three pillars of support. We are a software development company. We produce our own software, back office financial software that competes with QuickBooks. And then in addition to that, we have a vetted network of service providers, bookkeepers, accountants, strategists, those types of folks. And then the last pillar is business financing. So a small business can apply through our software and get matched up to lenders that are appropriate to their risk profile.
So now how does it work? How does somebody get into your ecosystem? Like, what's typically the path?
Various paths. They could start off by applying for a business loan. So if they're in need of a...
Oh, really? So from a financing standpoint, you can say, oh, you know, one of my choices is FinSync.
Absolutely. So you could go and fill out it's about a 4-minute application online. Mm-hmm. That does not cost anything to do that. And then that application will get matched up to our network of lenders that have different folks that are in the network serving different sort of risk profiles. So All the way from startup, all the way up through a very mature business.
Now, it's a variety. It's not like I have an e-commerce business, so you have lenders for that, or I have a manufacturing business and I have lenders for that, because it's different needs for different folks.
It is. So on the financing side, you know, we have lenders that serve different niches for sure, right. Different sizes of companies. And then on the software side, we're focused more on the small business. So more of somebody who might be looking at a QuickBooks or something like that.
So that business could be any size. That can be a micro business just starting out, all the way into a more...
Micro to, let's say, growing enterprise. So we're not going to be a good fit for somebody who might be looking at something like an Oracle or an SAP.
Right. So now, like, what is that by revenue about? What's the range?
So we don't really think about it so much by revenue, but as by headcount. So Payroll is part of the suite of services that we provide. So companies up to, let's say, 150 employees would be sort of the high end of companies that we're a good fit for.
So what do lenders look for? Like, if Lee and I, for the Business Radio X Network, if we wanted to go borrow some money to expand the network, right? And we do want to expand the network. I don't know if it makes sense to borrow money to do it or not. What are they looking for to feel like, hey, this is a good outfit to lend money to? Are they looking at our credit, our personal credit? Are they looking at our revenue? Are they at our track record? What are they? What's got them saying, oh yeah, we'll lend these guys money?
Like the clever name.
Clever name's a great start. Absolutely, you probably get 20 extra points for that. For a smaller business, they're going to look at your cash flow. So how well you're managing your cash flow. So that means money coming in and out of the business. They might look at things like, have you overdrafted your account recently? Mm-hmm. If that's happening, that may be an indication that the owners are not quite keeping an eye on the books as closely as they should be. Mm-hmm. Revenue, of course, are you a going concern? And then, of course, what do you want to do with the money? So do you want to grow the business? You know, what purpose will that money
serve?
Well,
I just went to the boat show. Right. And there's
exactly, yeah.
Is that, are some of your clients the ones that are kind of those, they have a business, but it kind of bleeds into their lifestyle? Like, because some small business people, especially in
some people do that. I don't know any personally, but
right, where they don't have maybe clean books, where the business pile of money is over here and my life is over here, because they kind of meld together.
So lenders are going to be looking for, you know, proper bookkeeping and that sort of thing. It doesn't mean that they're not going to be interested in somebody who's got a lifestyle business. An owner operator is, you know, can have a fantastic business and those can get quite large. So that's not a problem in and of itself. But, you know, a history of understanding what's going on with the business and, you know, managing it. And what do you want to do with that money? Again, or if you're looking to grow, how are you going to grow? Is this money going to go to marketing? Do you want to buy a piece of equipment that might be helpful in serving more customers? Do you want to, you know, add employees? All those types of things they're going to want to know.
Now, as FinSync kind of serves these different groups of people and they have different needs, ultimately, though, you're serving the small business person or the business person, is at the heart of it, whether it's through partnering with an accounting firm or partnering with a lender. Like, you're kind of at the heart of it is the business owner, right?
At the heart of it is the business owner. And think about, you know, the business owner's experience. They're logged into the software in the cloud, whether they're doing their accounting or just right. working on a loan application. But those other parties that want to help them out, so that could be the lender, that could be accountants and bookkeepers, they're logged in and they get access to the same set of books in real time. Mm-hmm. So that makes everybody a lot more efficient. And they can have a, you know, an intelligent conversation about what makes
because they're getting it, they're getting the data. Everybody's getting the same data, and then they're seeing that how real it is, and they can access it as they need it. Each of those groups, right?
That's exactly right. So we're not relying on a business owner to email in documents or fax documents or that sort of thing. Everybody's logged in and they can have a real-time conversation.
So now how did the business start? Was it always kind of this three-tiered groups, or did it start with one of the group and kind of organically expand to the other groups?
Yeah, that's a great question. So our founder started FinSync in 2011 here in Atlanta and came into the business out of a history of small business lending. He's a gentleman named Tucker Mathis, who's our CEO today. And we started on the software side. So we spent years developing software before we went live with that piece.
So software to say, okay, we're going to compete with QuickBooks? Like, that was the thinking?
Absolutely, to compete with QuickBooks, but it's not really about competing with QuickBooks. The overarching theme of those three things is businesses can benefit from better cash flow management, right? So QuickBooks is an accounting software. They rely on third-party apps for payroll and payments and different things like that. Our system is a consolidated system. So when you have that, what it does for that business is it gives them that visibility in an automated way, in an efficient way, without somebody, let's say, chasing down numbers and putting them into Excel to look at where that business is going. And we are really well positioned to do that because we have the invoicing data, the payments data, bill pay data, and then that payroll data. So we know a lot of the future transactions of a business already, and we make it super easy. We just put them in a graphical format that business can look at any time.
And then the business owner, this is easier for them to deal with than a QuickBooks?
It is. It syncs with the bank and credit card systems. It's pulling in those transactions. And then typically somebody who's using a QuickBooks online, they're also going to be having, in addition to that, anywhere from 2 to 6 add-on applications. Mm-hmm. So if you think about a small business that's logging in throughout the day, they're managing, you know, as many as 8 passwords for the owner, but then their accountant, their, you know, payroll administrator, they may have billing folks, they may have invoicing folks, all those people being spread across all those pieces of software becomes pretty inefficient. It's certainly better than paper, but there's a better way, and that's us.
All right, so there goes the QuickBooks sponsorship. We can write that. That's gone.
All right, so we're going to have to talk to Eddie later.
Now FinSync's going to have to pick up that slack. So when should a small business start at least entertaining the idea of getting organized with payroll, like having a payroll service or the
because kind of so many people use kind of third party resources to do a lot of the work. It's not, you know, like back in the day, you would hire somebody, you'd get part timers, but now, you know, there's virtual people doing all kinds of stuff.
In terms of payroll, I think outsourcing it probably from the beginning makes a lot of sense. Learning the nuance of managing payroll internally in a small business for a firm that might have, you know, 1 to 3 senior leaders. Probably isn't an efficient way to, you know, use time. So I would think, you know, as soon as there are W-2 employees, then it would make sense to outsource that to a software company that probably has that services piece on top of it. So I would say very early.
So even if you've got 1 or 2 W-2, that kind of service can be scaled down and scaled up. So it makes sense even with just a few W-2 employees is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, absolutely. The cost is negligible. So, you know, in our system, having 2 employees might cost a business an extra $20 a month to offload all of that processing and paperwork. So the return on time is pretty impressive.
And how much time would it cost me and you to try to figure out all that stuff? And then we'd do it wrong and pay penalties, right?
So now, when you're working with your clients, the business owner, like you said, a lot of times comes in initially through some sort of a lending challenge, or they need lending and they need funding. What if they just are an ongoing business and they're, you know, frustrated with QuickBooks, or they want a different solution and they come in through that kind of portal? Like, so then now they're coming, I just want a better solution for keeping track of stuff. How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to start as well. And that's a lot of folks that are looking for something different, maybe something that's more intuitive. Maybe right. they're looking for, you know, to go from 4 to 7 applications to 1. So we offer a free trial so they can jump into the software, you know, start playing with the system. They can connect bank and credit card accounts, pull in some data and see how that works. And then they can add modules over time. So they can get started for $10 a month with our business payments platform and then grow from there, adding accounting, bill pay, invoicing, cash flow management. And then if they have those W-2s that we were talking about, they can add the payroll and projects modules as well.
Now, is it something that I sign up for it, I start using it, and I'm kind of on my own on using it? Or is there kind of a help desk or, you know, an account manager?
That's a great question. So we're lucky in the fact that we only serve the U.S. market and we take the service aspect very seriously. So we do have a chat 800 number, email, and then a giant support library. All of those are free for our users to reach out to. So they get somebody that knows the software that's here that has, you know, an understanding of U.S. business, and they can reach out to them at any time. And then if they want to leverage our service network, we have bookkeepers and accountants that we have vetted, and they can grant those folks access to their system and have them take over some of that sort of finance burden, take that off the owner's shoulders, and allow somebody in the cloud to handle that for them.
So now that group, the accountants and bookkeepers, the people who are dealing with lots of these business people, how do you work with them? Is this something that you have some sort of a partnership with them where you're working together, where you encourage them to offer FinSync to their clients so that everybody's reading off the same, you know, kind of data? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So the folks that we're making recommendations to, you know, they're asked, do they have that FinSync experience? So if somebody comes to us and is seeking a, you know, a bookkeeper and they're in the FinSync cloud already, then we're going to match them to somebody who has that experience.
Right. Because, you know, they know how to use it and get the most out of it.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about, right? That efficiency. So they are go through a vetting process. They're interviewed. We talk about skills. We also talk about, you know, the types of businesses that accountants and bookkeepers like to work with. You know, they have different, you know, some folks really like to work with restaurants, for example, or some folks like to work with, you know, a marketing agency, or right. they have their specialization. So we, you know, think about those things as well.
And then, so you have these people all over the country?
All over the country, yeah. All over the country, but not all over the world. We're 100% United States facing.
And then do you have CPAs out in the marketing place? And I may be using the wrong title, but people who do that, you know, that kind of business planning, do you have people like that out in the world where I might be talking to my CPA and that person may recommend, hey, Stone, I see on your business side of things, you really got to get some things buttoned down. You ought to seriously think about FinSync. Have you got like that group of people out there too? Or are you developing?
Like evangelizing.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. So in the accountant and bookkeeper channel, and then where we're growing, especially right now, is banks and credit unions are starting to recommend FinSync as well.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
It makes a ton of sense for them to be helpful to their small businesses, managing cash flow, right? That's the biggest reason that small businesses fail. So there's a lot of interest there as well.
And then, so then they're also lending. So they check that box as well.
So they get some benefit there as well, right? If they have a loan application and the books are in order, that's hugely beneficial there as well.
So now what do you need more of as you grow? What are you looking to, what do you need? Do you need more kind of these third party evangelists? Do you need more of the business owner kind of tapping into this, more awareness of the brand?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, we're in a space with some competitors that have been around for a long time.
Yeah, a minute or two. Yeah.
Yeah. QuickBooks and ADP have been around for a long time.
They have stadiums.
That's correct.
I don't know how your stadium plan is going.
Absolutely. I'd say awareness. But I think there's, you know, a lot of folks that have had the thought there must be a better way, and they're coming across us and figuring that out. So
like
exciting.
In a sense or two, like, why is FinSync the better way? Is it because of the simplicity and the intuitiveness? Like, what's the thing that really separates you for the business owner that's going to, because remember, this is a big shift. They've heard of the other brand for a long time.
Yep.
And to make a...
That we don't say on air anymore.
Exactly.
Now that FinSync is our go-to, right?
We'll say Voldemort.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. But,
somebody's going to make this decision and put their neck on the line because this is kind of a challenger brand in a lot of respects.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that we've, you know, probably seen in all kinds of business tracks that the incumbent maybe slows down and doesn't innovate in a way that they maybe should, maybe that the market wants them to. But it's all about cash flow management, right? That is, you know, statistically the biggest reason small businesses fail. And we are uniquely positioned to handle that piece better than others because we are the payments engine. We are the accounting engine. We are the payroll engine. And we automate all that stuff that a small business probably doesn't have time to do. Maybe they would pay somebody to do that type of analysis later in Excel. But we do that internally and it's real time. So they can log in anytime and see, you know, this is what Finns thinks my cash balance will be in 30, 60, 90 days.
So it projects out into the future.
It does.
In a better way than maybe current tools.
Absolutely. It projects out in an automated way. Anybody else who's getting that sort of analysis probably is doing that in Excel, and they would have to be doing that constantly to maintain that type of visibility.
And then how quickly, if somebody switches, are they going to kind of see a benefit and get through that learning curve?
They can start to leverage the efficiencies around payments within, you know, the first 24 hours of being, you know, turned on in the system. The cash flow management piece is going to start to roll up data as they start to put invoices, start running payroll, things like that. So especially in month two, they're going to be, you know, benefiting from most of the capabilities of the system already.
And then how easy is it to switch? If I've been a Voldemort user for many years and I want to switch, like how easy is that?
It is pretty easy. And we have that team of US-based support to help with that process as well. We have folks on the team that just focus on those conversions. So it's not just Voldemort, but those other.
Right. There's other ones.
Yeah. Those other evil wizards out there.
But that's the handholding that small business people are going to want, right? They're going to want help. It's that transition cost as much as anything else. That's not always green dollars, but it's time and energy and.
Absolutely. It's opportunity cost. And, you know, our view is not that small business owners should become, you know, software experts, right? They need the benefit, right? Their expertise needs to be focused on what they do well, you know, whatever that product, whatever that business delivers, be it a service or a product, that's really where that business owner wants to excel. They don't need to be, you know, an amazing financial software user.
Now, the software has tremendous value to the small to mid-sized business owner. Is this network of these professionals also an untapped area that the business owner can benefit from as well?
There are a lot of benefits to looking at, especially on a smaller business, until it makes sense to have a full-time person internally to leverage, you know, what we refer to as the gig economy. Mm-hmm. These are folks that have flexible hours, a level of expertise. A lot of the folks in the network have big top four accounting experience, but have, you know, gone independent, opened a virtual book of business because they want to work from home. They don't want to commute. They want to set their own schedules and those sorts of things.
These people are out there ready to help.
Absolutely.
And then you help kind of be a matchmaker or give them a platform that they can kind of explore and then find the right fit for themselves.
That's right. On the service provider side, they're applying. They go through a rigorous interview process, mm-hmm. and we, you know, collect that data on them about who might be a good fit for them. And then on the business side, when they apply, we understand, you know, what needs that business has. Maybe they're sort of specialized capabilities. Maybe they contract with the government, for example. So we're going to make a match based on what we know from both sides.
So I find this very attractive. I like the idea that we can come into your system, into your ecosystem, have access to the software. It sounds like it's going to be a lot more Lee and Stone friendly, maybe than some of the stuff that we have, and that you have these vetted professionals so that we know that if we work through your system to start working with a bookkeeper, that person definitely knows your stuff, but also maybe is used to working with, I don't know, media firms or small businesses or something. And then if and when we need a CPA or we want to explore bringing on more capital. I like it being all in that one ecosystem. I find that very attractive.
Yeah, the all-in-one nature of it is, you know, creates a lot of efficiencies, and it's, you know, and it's a safety net as well. We've done a lot of that legwork to, you know, find out how that person performs with other businesses and be sure that they, you know, have those skills that they claim to have and that sort of thing.
And then you said that if any business needs a loan, they can go to FinSync website and then within 4 minutes apply. And
that's right. So we have an electronic loan application, and our system is pretty different in that our application, instead of going to a single lender, the old way of applying for a business loan would be to go lender to lender, potentially filling out, you know, reams of paper at somebody's desk. Our system is different because we have all the lenders that cover that risk spectrum, and we have all their products in the system. So you fill out our application, and then we only send your application to those lenders who have a product
that's a soft match already. So you're not going through that process of getting turned down here, going to the next literally office building, that sort of thing. You just apply once and we handle that part for you.
So if you're a small business, mid-sized business out there and you want to learn more about FinSync, and maybe at any level, right, whether it's maybe switch, maybe you're getting frustrated by your current software, maybe you need a loan, maybe you need a new CPA, they can go to your website and kind of answer help in all those areas.
Absolutely. FinSync.com. We have a great chat team as well. You can give us a call. You can jump on a 7-day free trial, schedule a demo. So we have lots of ways to get to know us, but it all starts at FinSync.com.
And that's FinSync.com.
That's correct.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Stay with us. We're going to visit with a few more guests. Okay.
Fantastic.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us the Director of Pro Bono Planning and Community Outreach for the Financial Planning Association of Georgia. Please join me in welcoming to the show Miss Kristen Pugh. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you join us. Did you learn anything in that last segment?
Yeah, I did. And I have some clients in my for-profit life. I might have to reach out.
Well, there you go.
There you
for
go.
Some FinSync, some business owners.
So Blake, hand me some of those commission forms.
See, we have a portal too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Kristen, you're here to talk about the Financial Planning Association of Georgia.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. What kind of work do they do?
Yep. So the Financial Planning Association of Georgia, we're a chapter of a much larger association. There's about 88 chapters in the country. So imagine like the American Medical Association is for doctors, the ADA is for dentists. We are for financial planners and financial advisors. We are, because of that, we do a lot of networking events, conferences, lots of continuing ed just to keep everybody abreast of what's going on in the financial planning industry. And I specifically head up our pro bono or community outreach arm. So we have, of our 600 members, we have about 100 plus now that have kind of designated themselves as volunteers wanting to go out.
So you have 600 here locally?
Correct.
Really?
Well, in the state of Georgia.
That's the state of
Georgia. Most are located here, though.
And they're up for doing some pro bono work for who? Who would they be doing pro bono work for?
So basically the underserved communities of Atlanta. The way we work is we will partner with nonprofits. For instance, this past Saturday, we were actually out at Camp Twin Lakes for Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, their camp. They have the Transplant Families and Parents Weekend. And so we did a panel. And so we serve underserved, but then we also serve at-risk communities. So those, if you can imagine, that are saddled with medical bills.
Mm-hmm.
And they just need a little bit of guidance, maybe just a discussion around some financial planning topics. So that's one way we operate.
So this kind of financial literacy mm-hmm. that the lay person probably doesn't have a lot of,
yeah.
right? There's
yeah.
some misconceptions or maybe...
Oh, yeah.
Bad information.
Absolutely. I mean, can you imagine every commercial about financial,
no, I know.
Whatever it is, has small print for
right.
know, days.
And then there's a lot of fear because people don't want to make a mistake.
Absolutely.
And then there's a lot of kind of noise in the media about all this doom and gloom that, mm-hmm. you know, dangers around every
Talking
corner.
Heads, yeah. right. Oh, absolutely.
So how do you kind of educate people in a safe manner that makes them at least feel semi-confident yeah. that they can do this?
Absolutely. I think, I mean, this, and, you know, we've grown the organization, but we found that really that individual attention from the planners really kind of hits at home. We do these workshops, but we take time to address everybody's questions and to talk to them specifically, also make them feel comfortable asking these questions and discussing it, and also bringing in our own experiences, because it is scary to talk about it. And, you know, no matter what question you have, you think that you're the only one that's asking
right,
like that
this
question.
This is only affecting
yeah,
me.
Yeah, this is only, right. I'm the only one going through this. I can't ask that. So we create a good environment to do that, and we train on that. So we want to make sure that everybody can feel that they're being addressed.
So is there a top three, top five kind of topics that
yeah.
people kind of ask about the most?
I would say our organizations reach out to us mostly about credit.
Credit, like
understanding credit.
Understand their credit
mm-hmm.
score or how that impacts
it's
them.
Understanding the score, it's rebuilding credit, it's understanding, you know, how do I use credit? And sometimes it's, we get to that point where we don't even know that it is something you can use. It's a tool. It's, you know, utilized. Right. That I would say next is budgeting, you know, just getting back to the basics, spending. And
so what percentage
saving.
Of people budget, you think?
Oh gosh, low percent, low like, percent. And I'm
under 20%.
Yes.
Under 20.
Oh yeah.
So people just kind of wing it every day.
I would say, I mean, I don't know if they wing it, but at least I would say that. So you've probably heard that statistic that there's, you know, very little savings. Every person in America, I think they said something like less than $1,000 saved for retirement or something like that. Ouch. Have you heard that? That speaks directly to budgeting. Mm-hmm. Because if you're budgeting, then you are setting aside a certain amount or percentage for savings.
So now somebody like you that's in this world, you probably grew up, or at least at some point in your career or life, you said, you know what, I got to keep track of this stuff and I'm going to take some steps and I'm going to.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so is that kind of, you think, a personality type, or do you think that people don't kind of follow these, which seems kind of semi-intuitive things, just because they're not aware of it, or that there's a scarcity of revenue, so they don't think that they have enough money to save and budget?
You know, that's a good question. I think it's a combination. You know, statistics show that those that grew up, mm-hmm. and I don't know if you've ever read The Millionaire Next Door, mm-hmm. But if you ever come across people that were taught to save, they will beget children that will also save, uh-huh. and so on. So it ends up being this, you know,
so it can be
effect.
Taught and role modeled.
It can be role modeled, and, right. and that's, you know, where you learn.
But if the people you're hanging out with, if that's not a priority for them, mm-hmm. and you grow up in that environment,
right,
then you don't ever see it.
Exactly.
Right?
So to see it is huge. To see it in action,
right.
To see it, you know, just in a positive aspect, to see it in a positive aspect is huge when you're growing up. And then the personality, if you're someone that is, adaptable, someone that can learn to, you know, do that, then you will. And I mean, sometimes people are pressure prompted. They might not, you know, start saving until they hit what you would call, I'm doing air quotes, like you need to meet rock bottom, where they have to save, where they have to, you know, declare bankruptcy. But you know, we don't want people to get to that point. We just want them to have the information and make those decisions.
And that's a lot of your work, is to go out to these organizations where there are people that are open to learning. Correct. And then give them some information and maybe mm-hmm. some baby steps they can take to kind of get on the right path.
Correct. Correct. And we also, another part of what we do is not just the group learning, but those organizations that partner with us, they do have access to our planners, meaning those individual members nice. Can shoot us an email and we match them up with a volunteer planner for a short-term engagement, usually less than 6 months. And then they can kind of get their financial path in order. They can set goals. And then that that planner, a big part of what we do is really can help them hold them accountable to those goals one-on-one.
So now what is that 6 month kind of, like what can be accomplished in that 6 month typically?
Yeah. So, you know, meeting in person or virtually depends on what works for them and where they're located. But the first part is really just data gathering, kind of understanding what is the situation. I'll talk a little bit about being a certified financial planner, a CFP. Are you familiar with that designation? Or
I've heard that designation okay. before.
So that is actually the highest designation within the financial planning industry. So what that does is we are required to basically take into account all aspects of your financial life. So it's not just the budgeting, it's not saving, it's not just investments, it's estate planning, it's wills, trusts, things like that, insurance, everything. So you meet with someone, and part of the CFP, what we've learned is you just have to first look at all of the information that's there. And then you meet and establish goals. And it's not my goal, it's their goal. So really just talking about what do you want to accomplish?
All right, so you got to know all this number stuff, but you also got to know how to deal with people.
Yeah,
because what you're describing, you could be a person could be very technically competent with mm-hmm. all of this financial literacy, all that, and then they may not be all that great with people. You got to do what you do for a living and to help this organization. You got to be good at both, right?
Yes, absolutely. But you're finding in the CFP examination process, there's a little bit of psychology, a little bit more of effective listening, a little bit more empathy, things being thrown in there, because that is important, because people, to in order to establish and then adhere to a goal, you're working with someone, you have to like that person. You have to then trust that person that they're there. So that doesn't just come along just because you have that knowledge, to your point. So, so yes, I would say that is a big part of what we do as a volunteer and in your for-profit life as an advisor. Absolutely.
Now, how do you handle, like, when you're in your for-profit life, mm-hmm. people are voluntarily coming to you because they have some sort of wealth or they have mm-hmm. financial, at least they, in their mind, they think they're stable, even though a lot of people may not be as stable as they think they are, but mm-hmm. they think that they got stuff and they want to just kind of wring out the most of it. Mm-hmm. That's probably the thinking. But in your nonprofit life, some of these people don't have a lot of resources.
That's correct.
And then they don't even know, like, they're not coming as voluntarily. They're coming because,
well, they might be embarrassed even, right? It's like, yeah, my mom was a school teacher and she would teach adults how to read. Mm-hmm. And part of her challenge was they came in like embarrassed. Mm-hmm. So that could happen in this situation, right?
Yeah. No, that's a big part. There is a level of, I hate to say, like, shame, you know, feeling like I could have done more. You know, you talk to a 50 or 60 year old and they say, I wish I had done more. You know what? Forget about that. We're working today and for the future. Don't worry about that. We're here and let's make some changes now, starting now. So you have to talk through that and get past that, to really establish.
So what was it like that first time you went on one of those calls where you, when a person, like, typically I'm sure in your day job, there's mm-hmm. people with a certain amount of wealth, some fame, maybe mm-hmm. some, there's a certain type of person. And now here's this person that doesn't have a portfolio, stocks and all this stuff. They come in with kind of nothing and they go, okay, here, I got this. Now make this work.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it's a very similar feeling, because as a financial advisor or planner, someone who's working in a service industry, you always think, I just don't know everything. Like, I'm never going to know everything. What if they ask me this? What if, that doesn't change no matter the wealth.
Exactly.
It doesn't. It absolutely does not change. But I can always go in and say, you know, if I don't know, I can find out for you.
But they come in. But they come in with, say, okay, I have $1,000. I make $2,000 a month. Mm-hmm. So now create a financial plan for me that's going to work. And mm-hmm. then you start kind of laying out, well, how much is your rent? How much is these things?
Exactly.
And then their amount of leeway is smaller.
It's smaller. It's smaller, but dollars are dollars and they'll add up. So we then just need to set goals and then
help them create some early wins, I would think, right?
Absolutely.
That would be important, I would think.
What are some of the places you do to try to create those early wins? Like, where are some areas that maybe a person that doesn't think they have a lot of wealth can maybe make an impact?
Well, really, cutting the expenses. And it's not just, oh, I eat out too much. I mean, that's actually the biggest expense we come across, is that people, instead of making food at home, they'll eat out, and that adds up.
Right.
And that's across the board. But really just, you know, calling your insurance provider, you know, whether it's Progressive or Geico, start there. You can probably negotiate a lower premium if you've been with them for a certain amount of time and perhaps your credit's gone up in that amount of time. I don't know if you noticed, but your rates do tend to go up every year. And that's a Georgia or state regulated piece. So that
so
start there.
Some things can be negotiated that you might not be aware of.
Exactly. Same thing with credit card interest rates. You can also, you know, bundle your insurance, of course, that'll make it a little bit cheaper. You can also increase your deductibles. So I would caution that, of course, with anybody, that to make sure that you've got a good emergency savings fund, mm-hmm. So that you can pay that deductible, but that does lower your premium. So there's little ways, and we'd sit down with that person and understand, well, what is going on in your daily financial life that we can just really start taking a better look at.
Incredibly rewarding, though. And it's not the dollar amount, though, but if you start working with a person and you start to see them make some progress, mm-hmm. that's got to be incredibly rewarding.
It is.
To do that.
It's incredibly rewarding when they realize how great they've done with it. And that's the big thing, is it's little victories. So we might say, hey, you need to save 3 to 6 months of fixed expenses for your emergency fund. That might look like $10,000. That's a lot of money. So why don't we start small? Let's do 500. All right, you got to 500. Oh, great. You know, we just want to keep,
keep the momentum.
Yeah, keep the momentum.
And then that power of compounding. You got to get that working for you, right?
Yeah, the power of compounding. Yeah. So once that emergency, then let's talk investing.
Right. You got to get that working
for
you.
Get rid of some of that debt and some of that interest, right?
Exactly.
But just chipping away a little bit and helping them see the progress they're making.
Exactly. And you always want to talk about, too, how best will they do this? So for instance, you know, we know that there's different types of learners. There's visual learners, auditory, people that are more tactile, but you know, there's different types of savers too. I'm one of those set it and forget it people. I love the Acorns app because I don't know if you're familiar with you're shaking your
yeah. I've heard of it.
So the idea is that it just pulls off, it rounds up your spending and you can set it for a credit card or a debit card and then it just puts it away. You don't even
see it.
And I love that aspect. I'm not one where I can put cash in an envelope and put it under my mattress. I'll remember, oh yeah, Kristen, you got that $500 under your, let's go get that. Right. I can't do that. But right. I know some of our pro bono clients can do that.
Right.
And that might be better for them to have that physical way of saving.
Right, where they can touch it.
Exactly.
And I'm with you. I love these automated things where you just say, okay, put that, and then, you know, maybe I do this with my kid where we set aside an amount every month to be pulled out of his checking account, and then every year it's on my calendar to revisit.
To review it?
Right, like, oh, so just great. Built into, I mean, there's so much technology now that you can utilize, so utilize the technology.
Exactly.
I mean, it's there to remind you and to do some of the stuff, so let them do some of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So now, what do you need more right now for FPA of Georgia? Do you need more financial advisors to get involved with the organization and volunteer?
Yeah, absolutely. We always need volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're kind of approaching what we call Financial Planning Month. So
what
October
is Financial Planning Month.
Mm-hmm. So October is
really why October.
You know, I don't know. It was just a nationwide push.
Financial Planning Month.
Yep.
Okay.
So October is Financial Planning Month. And so that just means that that's kind of our extra push. We have workshops and events throughout the year, but we just have a lot more in October. And it's just a way for those financial advisors and planners who, you know, are really busy throughout the year. They just remember, okay, October, I'm going to do a little bit of volunteering. And so we always need more volunteers.
And have you figured out a way to make it easy to volunteer, easy to get involved?
Yes, absolutely. So you do have to be a member of FPA. So if you're not, you go to fpaga.org and you can register there. And once you're a member, then you just reach out and we have a whole membership form that we have you fill out and we add you to our volunteer database. And then you're the first person to receive any kind of events or volunteer need notifications.
And then what's an organization that would be a good fit to have you come out and do your talk?
A good organization is one that focuses on maybe serving or developing individuals in the community that don't have a lot of means. One of them that we first started actually working with was called iCare Atlanta. And they're located in Doraville and they actually stabilize lives of homelessness or homeless. And so we go out and typically do budgeting and credit workshops for them. I would say just any organization that really just has a need. You know, there's not, and it's kind of difficult too because I think my personal opinion is everybody has some kind of financial literacy need, no matter what kind of income you have. But maybe those people that need extra kind of accountability and care and that knowledge.
And let's have the curriculum coordinators in the local high schools drop Algebra 3 and put in a financial literacy course. Right?
How about that?
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Yeah, preaching to the choir.
I know. I don't know why teaching compounding should be like an elementary school.
Just credit first. Can we talk about credit, early?
But compounding is the gift that keeps on giving. So the earlier you start with that, the better. So start them like in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
Absolutely.
Why are they keeping that a secret?
Well, one of the things that I really love about what you're doing, my vision of your world is this almost kind of dog-eat-dog, extremely competitive landscape, all these financial planners out there, you know, scratching and clawing for a business. And maybe there's some truth to all of that, but you've set all that aside, and you've got people from a variety of firms, I'm operating under that assumption,
absolutely.
And you've come together to try to help these underserved constituencies. I think that's marvelous.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what it is. It's people from everywhere. We've got brokers, you know, that are just in the stock broking, just that's what they do, but they also have their CFP designation. But then we've got people like me that work for a registered investment advisor firm. You've got people in mutual funds, I mean, in insurance, but they've all come together because they really want to help their community.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, if you're a financial advisor out there and you want to get involved with the organization, what's the website again?
It's fpaga.org.
And then do you want to give a plug for your day job?
Oh, yes. My day job. I am a wealth advisor for True Wealth. We're located in Buckhead, and you can reach us at truewealth.com.
Good stuff, Kristen. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for all that you do to help the community.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, keep up the good work. And maybe stay connected with us, and let's check in from time to time and see how things are going. And maybe there's some wisdom in spotlighting some of these organizations and talking about the good work that they're doing and how they're leveraging the stuff that you're doing.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
All right, so maybe that's worth exploring. Mm-hmm. All right, y'all ready for the headliner, Lee?
All right, a lot of pressure.
Man, he's been so patient. He's been taking notes. He's been nodding his head. Please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone, author, founder, small business expert, and international speaker, Mr. J.R. McNair. How you doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. Great to be here.
So these last two segments, that's a hard act, couple of hard acts to follow. You want to reschedule or you want to do this?
Hey, listen, let me tell you, they really kind of helped to set up what I'm going to talk about.
Fantastic.
So thank you.
Great. All right. So when we first met you, you were talking about a company called Container Box.
Mm-hmm.
And that was changing the world.
That's correct.
And that's still ongoing. Why don't you kind of brief people about where we are with that?
Yeah. So the Container Box comes out of trying to help solve the problem of the global housing crisis. And we're producing homes. You know, there's a lack of homes under $200,000 in the nation. I mean, it's like 4 million a lack of that inventory on the market. So we wanted to produce something. So we produce container homes and down in our factory down in Macon and our headquarters offices in Buckhead, and we ship them all across the world. And we've been getting some incredible traction there. So that's been going great.
And then so tell people what that container is that is being shipped all over the planet.
So it's a container home. We take a container, shipping container.
Container that's like on metal, a truck, okay. The back of a boat.
That's correct. That's correct. And so, you know,
A lot of them floating around.
A lot of them have been sitting just places. And so we take them, preferably the ones that don't have a lot of mileage on them, and we take them and we convert them. And this modular home building that's stuff that's built inside a factory. See, the biggest difference between any modular building and traditional building is that the bulk of your costs in construction come from on-site labor. Mm-hmm. And so if you can do all of that somewhere else and then ship it, that saves you a ton of money. And so that's the biggest thing that we're looking at solving and helping people with.
So then these containers kind of are modular.
Yes.
And then they go somewhere and then they're rebuilt into the home.
Well, yeah. So we take them there. We build everything out. We put the plumbing, drywall, electrical, everything on site. The only thing that we don't put on site is the roof, and it's just there. It's just it takes really less than a half a day to put that on, and you can be ready to roll in less than a week with a new home.
Wow. And then who are you partnering with? Who buys the homes and who puts the homes, you know, gets the land to put the home and all that?
Well, that's typically business owners. Well, investors, we first thought this was going to be big for just people that were looking, millennials, maybe to get a home.
Like these mini home kind of people that are looking for the smaller footprint.
Yeah, we looked at that. What we end up seeing is the bulk of the people who were interested in these were investors, developers wanting to build huge
like neighborhoods of these container box.
Yes. Oh. And cities that say, hey, we don't have affordable, we don't have any housing. We have a problem. Look at San Francisco, London, all these areas. They don't have housing and they have all these people. So what are you going to do?
Do the math. You know? So that's an ongoing thing.
That is. It's going great. We're always looking for new people to help us with that.
So now there's the Velocity Company that we also talked about that, I believe.
Yeah. You know, Velocity Company, that's actually the company that ended up building a lot of the wealth that I had to where I was able to invest in other things. One of the things we saw, of course, Forbes said that by 2020, 50% of the U.S. population would be entrepreneurs, either in a part-time or full-time That's capacity. It. I mean, we're talking about 4 months now. We're in 2020. And so you mean to tell me one out of two people are going to be right. working for themselves? So we saw this. Back in 2002, back when it wasn't a sexy thing to be an entrepreneur, right. you know, for Shark Tank and all of this, everybody's working corporate. They would say, oh, you're an entrepreneur. Like, what you're saying is you don't got a job, that right?
That's French for unemployed.
Exactly. right. And so, but see, you know, the funny thing about it, you know, I graduated top of my class from Wofford College with 3 six-figure job offers, and I turned them down because I wanted to play football and I wanted to start a company. So I did it by choice. And everybody thought I was crazy, and I was a little crazy, but it ended up working out. And so one of the things that we saw, we said all these entrepreneurs, they're going to be entrepreneurs whether or not anybody helps them, right? So we wanted, they're going to go and the way that the market and everything is changing, they need help. They need support. And that's where we're there with the Velocity Company to help them get to that next level and go.
So you got the Velocity Company, you got the Container Box, and then this has all culminated yes. in this new book
yes.
that's almost out soon.
Yes.
Us will be reading this book.
That is correct.
So tell us about the book.
Yeah, well, I'll back up. You know, we started our company in 2002, and so we've helped over 6,400 companies. Back in 2013, I didn't know what a startup was. You know, I thought that all businesses that started were a startup, right? They just startups, right? But I started visiting these pitches and across the Southeast, I would travel, people would have me speaking, and then I would go to these pitch places and see these individuals pitch on their startups, high growth technology startups on that end. And so I visited. What inspired me to just want to write this book? I visited a pitch place somewhere in the Southeast. This was a couple months ago. I won't mention where it was, but I was visiting there, and it was a guy. He came up, and he was just from an ex NFL person, and he gets up and he speaks about, oh yeah, this is what I've done in the NFL. And I mean, he just goes on talking about himself for about 5 or 10 minutes. And then I'm so excited. I'm like, man, what is,
I can't wait to hear.
I'm excited. I'm sitting here like,
he got me,
man. So he has us here, and he goes and talks about all these different things. And then he gets down, he says, we're going to transform sports industry and this stuff. And I'm like, oh man. And I'm saying, so you get to it. What's,
I need the punchline. You know?
And no, so he gets down, he says, with sports camps. And I was like, sports huh? camp. I'm not saying that that's not a problem, but I don't think you hear people screaming from the top of
Where's
rooftops.
My sports camps?
Saying that sports camps are something that's a big problem.
Right.
And as he continues to go down, I'm like, okay, I'm thinking this guy's going to be talking about dehydration amongst athletes, how to solve the head injuries amongst football players.
Right. I
played professional football overseas at the college. So let me tell you, those are some problems.
Right.
Okay, I still have injuries when wake up in the morning feeling on a rainy day. But you know, and so they started going on and talking about these things. And then he was like, yeah, and so we have this thing that we're doing in sports camps, and then they just throw technology on it.
It's an app.
And then now it's
problem solved.
And it's like, seriously. And that's where it began. But that was, then he started going in and didn't even understand his numbers. I was looking on his sheet there, and when he had up there, they didn't really think through what they were doing,
right.
and just thought just because they threw technology on it that it made it something that was important and something that people needed to throw money at and get involved with. And it started there, but it didn't end there. The next person that came up was talking about something in lawn care. And so I used to own two huge landscaping companies, and they started talking about how they were going to solve the problems of putting technology in the hands of these lawn care workers and helping.
And you had already done it. So you've lived it. So you kind of had a different perspective.
I was sitting back there just like in my chair, just like, oh my goodness.
And you're going, have they ever talked to somebody in lawn care? Yeah. Or is this, they had an idea in a whiteboard somewhere and they said, this would solve their problem.
I sit back and I'm thinking, who sits there all day long coming up with these ideas. And this, they don't, you know, I said, well, they said, we're going to put this technology in the hands of these lawn care people. And then they're going to do this. I said, first off, if you ever been on a truck, get right. off, and you get off, and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go in my ass. Right.
Well, that's not how it's going to be.
It's not going to happen. And then not only that, but the elephant in the room was that they didn't even understand their largest competitor that was in the industry. And I was like, hey, did you not know about, they were saying, oh, we're going to connect these, lawn care professionals with homeowners. I said, well, how about Home Advisor?
Don't they do that already?
And they really, really big. I mean, they didn't really even understand it. These were certain things that I was seeing. It wasn't just there. This is everywhere. When I see these companies and I go, and all of these organizations are so, excited about giving people opportunities to start companies, but they don't really look and see, is this something that you really need to start?
Right.
Is this something you might almost be creating more of a problem than you are a solution? Mm-hmm. You know, you look at companies like Facebook. They really started not solving a problem. You look at it when you look at it and you say, hey, they came saying, oh, we're going to post this. Now, I believe they solve a huge problem now. The problem that they solve, though, is they help businesses connect with potential customers through their ads. They have one of the best platforms out there. But that didn't come until later. Okay. When they had a lot of smart people and a lot of money to throw at something to where they're able to figure out what problems really existed.
Right.
So, you know, these are some of the areas that I've kind of saw, you know, when we came up with looking at this book.
And the book is solving real problems. And that helps a business owner kind of reframe maybe the activity they're doing to help maybe make an impact that's bigger than they maybe are seeing in the surface.
Well, first off, I say a lot of people chase opportunities. They don't really solve problems. Mm. And this is one thing that you have to see. You have these opportunities out here, and we have this shiny object syndrome, and we're looking, oh, you know what? I can do this or I can do that. And it's like, hey, but is this something that really needs to be solved? I mean, you know, is this something that I really want to dedicate 4 or 5 years of my life to? You can't get that time back. Man, I mean, you, it's one thing to waste investors' money, to waste your own money, but your time, you know, you're taking this time away from your kids, from your families, mm-hmm. from everybody. For what? Is it really something mm-hmm. that you can feel good about when you sit back and you're 80 years old and say, yeah, you know, I made this great dog walking app. Nothing against dog walking apps. I'm just saying, though. I'm just saying, is it something that you can really feel good about that I spent my time dedicating to? Mm-hmm.
So now, so that was the impetus for the book. Mm-hmm. And then where are you at in the book writing process?
Well, you know, one of the things I do anytime I write a book, I go and I just outline, what is this book going to be on? And it has to be some kind of passion behind why I'm doing it.
Well, you seem pretty fired up.
Hey, listen, man. but because this, I run an accelerator and I deal with a lot of startups, and they come in and I'm like,
now you can just hand them the book. Before you even step in the door, you're reading this book.
Listen, and you know, and it's not only just startups, it's small businesses. You know, it's a lot of problems that small businesses solve locally. Okay. In a small business is a local problem solver. Okay. And they solve, like, for example, here, you all are solving problems by helping entrepreneurs and people to get their stories out. A lot of people, they don't have platforms where they can really let other people know and put it in a format where people can easily grasp it and understand it.
Well, thank you for recognizing that. You articulated it perfectly. You sure write that down.
Did we get this recorded somewhere, Blake?
I already got it. Yeah.
And I mean, you know, and this is the thing. I mean, you're talking about the audience bases that you are speaking about. Mm-hmm. And I know indirectly.
Right. You're talking to Kristen about financial literacy and helping those groups learn more.
Yes. And in the financial literacy, that's so important. That's a huge market and opportunity. Mm-hmm. Eventually, when they do decide to get those things together, guess what? That's a huge opportunity for those people who are willing to invest.
Invest in their time now.
They, people are always looking for the now, and they don't understand it. Hey, some stuff takes a little investment, but in the long term, even if they can never repay you, I promise you, you'll get more back from it. So, and then when we're speaking, when you started the show speaking about cash, that's one of the things when I talk to entrepreneurs, I'm like, you have to, the biggest thing that you want to know as a small business, as a startup, how much cash do I have before I go out of business?
Yeah, what's my burn rate? Yeah.
You know, like that's what you need to have on the forefront.
That's every day.
Real problem. It really is.
How long is the runway?
How long? And you need to always have that on the front of your mind so that as you're going forward, you're like, okay, I got three days, 6 months. Right. I need to start planning for this now.
And so this book is going to address some of those kind of big questions to help the person at least kind of get their mind right in thinking about these things before they invest the time and the energy and resources in this venture.
Yes. And I mean, and one of the things people need to just understand, like, look and see what problems really exist in the world today. One of the reasons why we got into the container box, we saw this global housing crisis.
Right.
And no one seems to have a solution for it.
But there's a lot of containers sitting by themselves, minding their own business.
Minding their own business.
And look, let's pair those two together.
And make something happen.
Right.
And see, we're starting out with containers, but we're going into everything, just trying to figure out a way to supply homes on the market, whether that's light steel construction, whether that's I've seen companies we're looking at later on maybe purchasing some of these 3D printing companies that you ever seen right. them 3D
yeah.
print
yeah,
homes?
They build them from scratch.
And these are the things. It's just going out and solving that problem. Healthcare things, you know, these are areas that we're not going out looking for opportunities. These are things that people are screaming
that they want help with. They need it.
Yes. I mean, and this is the thing, and I don't go against like social media or anything like that. I do believe it's a problem that was solved, but what you look at in hours of productivity lost, the fact that when I go and talk to my relatives, nieces, nephews, they're fixated on it. We can't even have a conversation. We see the problems that they've solved, but they've also created additional problems. Right. And if you look at the net, has it really helped?
Right. Nobody's keeping that score.
You know. So.
What's next for you?
Well,
you got a lot on your plate.
Yeah, you know, I really want to help people. I mean, and that sounds like funny. You know, everybody wants to help, but I really do. I'm passionate about helping people. I always look for opportunities to help people. And I think if you can keep that mind focused, you know, the money will come and just try to, I'm a relationship person. I'm really big on relationships. So just trying to build more relationships. Get more people in to help us with what we're doing, because we're going out here really trying to solve the things that people don't necessarily want to solve right now.
Mm-hmm. And then if somebody wanted to connect with you, what's the best way?
You can go to my website, jrmcnair.com. That's jrmcnair.com. You can go to our website, thecontainerbox.com, smallbusinessday.com, and reach out to me online. I'm there.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today, JR.
Thank you for having me. Thank everybody. Appreciate it.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.